Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. It is Monday, the 14th of October. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Marlaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly.
I'm very glad you're with us today. Also with me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Happy Monday.
I'm glad it is. It's kind of early for me, so I haven't checked yet, but I'm glad to hear yours is going well. Our first topic today is kind of an interesting one, and we're going to do the best we can since Andrew isn't here today. And we're going to talk a little bit about browser data and what's happening with it, right, Charlotte?
Sort of, yeah. So we, Mac, let's start from the beginning. If you look in your phone, there's a whole host of settings. Some are on by default, some are not. Some refer to specific apps, some refer to the operating system as in general. Some of the settings for Safari in iOS, one is called, it's called fraudulent website prevention. And it basically, the idea is that it stops you being phished. Mm-hmm. If the system thinks, it will flag it up, and it does that by working in collaboration with other services, notably Google Safe Browsing. The other safe browsing, the other safe browsing option is Tencent Safe Browsing.
Okay.
That is a Chinese run firm. It has no link to the Chinese Communist Party. If you look through the settings on your phone in Safari, you can see that Tencent is listed there. It says, when fraudulent website warning is enabled, Safari will display a warning, and it says that some data, including your IP address, may go to Google Safe Browsing and Tencent Safe Browsing to check if a website is fraudulent. Now,
yeah,
Mac rumors noticed this, and they thought that this was an issue on Mac as well. Now, both myself and Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of Mac Observer, had a look, and we couldn't see any reference to Tencent on the Mac. He's using Mojave and is based in the US. I'm using Catalina and I'm based in the UK. And in neither of those setups did we see any reference to Tencent on the Mac. It says Safari is using Google Safe Browsing to identify fraudulent websites, which is interesting. So it seems to only be using that service on iOS.
Which okay. is the first question. Why?
I mean, you're right, John. There are a number of questions, aren't there, here?
Yes.
But does that kind of explain where we are? There is some... The point about this is... There's a couple of points about this. One, this is... Until Matt Rumors started poking in at this, this is not something many of us knew about.
Right. And part of that is because picking out this disclosure... This is a disclosure where Tencent is mentioned, and it's
right.
part of the wall of text. If you tap on learn more about Safari and privacy settings, I think.
Yeah.
So you tap on that. If you go into your settings app and go to the Safari settings, and in there, scroll down and tap on learn more about Safari search and security, and then look at the wall of text, which means whoever did this over at Mac Rumors is probably the first person to see it. That's part of where this comes from, is because this is just a disclosure that
right.
some people are seeing.
And it's a disclosure because this setting is on by default, and for
yes.
good reason. You do want, you know, I think, John, you probably agree with me that you would want to keep this service, you would want to keep this setting on, despite the potential
right.
issue.
Right. Well, one thought that occurs to me is that when companies are ashamed of what they're doing, they almost always hide what they're doing. I mean, just about
yes.
certainty that when a company is ashamed of what they're doing, they're going to hide it somewhere and bury it.
Yes.
Well, Apple buried it, but they didn't hide it per se. So they must feel comfortable about somebody finding this, somebody
oh,
who
please.
Wrote this. somebody who wrote this and had the authority to actually put it in print on the phone, because Apple's pretty careful about who, you know, about what they publish.
I believe this is as close. I mean, it's not even hiding in plain sight. That is, it's pretty embedded in the settings. It's.
Yeah, but
I
Apple
don't
has
think
to
that's not a not that is
somebody
not,
would eventually find it, and they did.
Eventually, being the operative word there.
Well, and I mean, if you knew that somebody was going to find something someday after somebody looked hard enough and somebody would finally make a fuss about it, would you risk it or would you bury it?
I think you're being generous. You are a kind of generous man, John.
Yes.
It's one of the many things that makes you a pleasure to work with.
John could have embarked on another career as a diplomat, apparently.
This is generosity in the extreme, I think.
Oh, absolutely. But the question is...
they know exactly what they're playing at here.
Well, any other company would have written to Google Safe Browsing or other partners. Right?
Really?
Any other company would have written and other partners.
Look, let's be really fair. This is my turn to be generous now. We don't even know anyone's doing anything wrong.
Right. That was going to be what I was going to say, was that there's a lot we don't know.
Oh, that's a good point.
There's a huge gap here of stuff
we
don't know.
Is that a company that has some political links that may make users concerned, some users concerned, has some kind of link that involves, including IP tracking, with Apple. That's what we know. We do not know if this only applies to users in the US, which it could. Mm-hmm. Users in China, which it could. We don't know if, like, the data for you know, us three living in the UK and the US is actually going to the Tencent servers. It might actually just be users in China, but they just put the disclosure onto every device. We don't know that because that's not made clear. We do not know how that data is stored, where it is stored, who uses it, what it is used for. There's a lot we don't know. So I don't want to go calling foul when there is a lot we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Apple,
sure,
if you're listening.
Apple appears to be comfortable with using it.
But only for...
I would say they're pretty happy for us not to have known about it for this stuff. But anyway, yes.
But also, it's only iOS. We were not able to find this. We couldn't find this on macOS. So this is only mobile traffic.
Which is which I thought was interesting.
Right.
Well, we don't even know that. I mean, you know, we've seen documentation inconsistencies galore in the past from Apple. Maybe it's just didn't get cross-tracked against macOS.
I feel like this is something that if they were going to do it everywhere, we would have seen it disclosed everywhere.
I feel like it's not a typo.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? No.
Exactly.
No.
They're only bothering with mobile traffic. And, I mean, proportionally, I could see that making sense. I don't think it's any great leap of logic to presume that they're selling way more iPhones than iMacs in China.
Sure.
Makes sense that maybe only the mobile traffic is...
My history of inconsistent documentation with Apple being behind in many cases or being inconsistent is so great that I'm not willing to sign off on the idea that it's written in stone that Mac is not using it.
Yeah, and I think this is another piece of information we simply don't have, because we haven't seen anything on macOS that implies that any of that's been updated recently.
And why would it be different? Why would it be different? The original thesis that iPhones sold in China would be using this, and this is just part of the disclosure, makes more sense. Although there's Mac sold in China too.
There are.
Right.
So, but
I don't think it's anywhere near the scale of iPhones. That's what I'm saying.
Well, does scale really come into play in terms of the...
I don't think it's about scale. It's
text disclosure.
We have no proof, whereas we have evidence, clear, given evidence from Apple itself, that there is that data and there is that relationship for mobile traffic. We have none of that with Mac traffic, and it seems particularly odd that that has not happened, given we've had brand new... operating system updates for both platforms now.
Right.
You'd have thought that they would have got that up to date on for Catalina.
That's part of why I thought the documentation was probably accurate, was because we just got a new OS.
Right, if it was like different on mine, but maybe, you know, there was a discrepancy between mine and Brian's, there may be some discussion there, but that doesn't feel right. I don't particularly want to go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
What I think, and I don't also want to repeat the show we had on Friday, but I think it does flag up questions again that Apple, this company that has made such a big play about its values, about its rights, particularly around user privacy, has again made a decision that they're not being, and this one is, they've been not being particularly open with users about. This is a setting, as I say, that's on by default. You have to fiddle around quite a lot in settings in a way that most ordinary users are never going to do to find it,
right,
or understand it.
Was this a deal that Apple made with China as part of doing business in China?
Just to finish.
Yeah.
My point is that with all of that, this is bringing again raising some of those questions that we raised on Friday's show. Why has this been going on? Why is it not being disclosed? There may well be a really, really good reason why Apple needs to do this.
And a completely logical, reasonable reason that
Absolutely.
If we just knew, we'd be like, oh, okay, that's fine.
Makes sense. Like, they might say, because Google, look, the reason that springs to mind, Google doesn't operate in China in the same way it does the rest of the world. Therefore, Apple needs a Chinese partner to offer the same service.
Okay.
So if Apple made that clear, if there was some way to know that, we might be a bit uncomfortable with it. And they said it's only for user data that is in China.
Right.
You know, geotagged in China.
Yeah.
We probably will get over it, right?
Right. Like, if they're just abiding by the Great Firewall in China and the rest of us aren't bothered with this, but because they distribute the same release of Mobile Safari everywhere, then this is what you... Then, mm-hmm. you know, it all happens. Like... And this is the sort of thing that we kind of have to consider, because this is a thing I do sometimes, is swap out the main thing in the story. So if this were not happening in China, if this were happening in Canada, for example, like, in order to do business in Canada, we need to abide by Canada's laws. And to do that, the data has to go to this place. Maybe in the U.S. we don't like it, but if that's the way it is in Canada, then that's the way it is in Canada. And we, you know, as Americans, we don't get a lot of say in Canadian government. You know, that's kind of up to Canada to handle for themselves. So, and I feel like that's kind of the same everywhere. That's part of what is weird about this. And again, this is part of the big information void that we have as far as all of this stuff. So yeah, it would really be nice if Apple came out and said something about this. They were certainly more than willing to respond to the Hong Kong app appear-disappear kerfuffle. So maybe we'll hear something about this too. I certainly hope so. Overall, Apple's been more amenable to the public statement from time to time. So I'd like to hear more about this and see what it is that Apple has to say on it, particularly as it gets more attention, because we're talking about it, other people are going to end up talking about it, and so maybe we will get more of those answers. I'd like to think so.
I would hope so.
Yeah, and if we do, we will tell you more about them right here at TDO, I promise. If you would like to weigh in on any of this, you can do so by emailing us at observations@macobserver.com. You can also talk to us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and my favorite way to get comments from everyone is to leave a comment in the show notes, because then you can talk to all the other people who are listening as well. Now, another thing we want to talk about is something Apple did say, and something that someone else said about Apple. We're going to talk about the iPhone 11, and I got my iPhone 11 Pro late last week. I'm very excited about it. It's really fantastic. It makes me so happy. The camera is just as mind-blowing as everybody says it is, and I am no longer the leader of Team Home Button, and I feel a little sad to leave my post, but Face ID is amazing. Like, I don't
told
mind
you.
I don't mind leaving Team Home Button. I don't. I was happy with my phone, but it was really time. Like, after seeing a lot of the camera stuff, I was pretty excited to get my phone. And for the first time, I took a picture in the night, and what I saw with my eyes looks exactly like what I got out of the camera. And it's
But will you now accept that I was right?
About what?
About how good Face ID is.
Oh, I never disagreed with you that it was great.
Okay.
Never, ever, ever. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I did not disagree. I just didn't have it. So I didn't have anything to really compare it to. So
you are forgiven.
I never said it was bad. I was just team home button until very recently. So, and apparently I'm not the only one who bought an iPhone 11 in some flavor. Right, Charlotte?
No. Many, many people have bought a new iPhone. Turns out Tim Cook is very happy about this. He said, he said it made a very strong start, he told Bild, the German newspaper, and that the launch could not have, they could not be happier with the launch. It's a surprise.
Considering they had low expectations to begin with, this is no surprise.
I mean, it is surprising to hear the CEO of a company being very positive about sales figures of their biggest, newest product. But
well, you got to think about the psychological reaction to that. What do you think if you were on the fence about buying an iPhone 11 and you hear that Tim Cook is really pleased with the sales and it's off to a strong start? How is that going to affect your thinking about how to get buy an iPhone 11?
I suspect it isn't.
I suspect it's going to weigh on your mind is a positive to prod you gently into making that purchase decision.
That's if you're the type of person, if you are the kind of person that cares what Tim Cook thinks, you probably bought an iPhone 11 already.
That's probably valid at this point.
Like, if you're the type of person that is fine, cares what Tim Cook said in an interview with the German magazine, like,
then definitely you're reading that interview on your iPhone 11.
Well, there are probably a lot of people who didn't want to go through the fuss of and the furor of trying to order it when it first came out, and you know, getting up at 5 a.m. California time and doing going through the drill, and maybe they thought they'd wait and see how things go to see if it's a boom or bust. A lot of people do that.
Ish, yeah. I mean, so another interesting thing that sort of came out via Bloomberg was that apparently Apple told suppliers to produce something somewhere between 70 and 75 million units of the iPhone 11.
Okay.
I think that's across the range. I don't think that can be one specific, you know.
No,
across
that's,
all,
yeah.
You know, 11
that's
Pro
all the capacities
Max.
And all the carriers and all the colors.
Sure. They're now telling them to prepare for across the board everything to get to the top end, to get to 75. They're aiming for the top end of that range now, so right. Things are obviously going well, and if we can expect things to go better, perhaps because Ming-Chi Kuo, the man, the myth, the enigma, says that the iPhone SE 2, this is a big one for me. Are you sitting down, John? This is going to blow your mind.
Okay.
Apparently, Apple is going to release the SE 2 next year, and it's going to sell a lot of them.
What?
Well, I believe maybe the first. I don't necessarily believe a lot, because the first SE 2 only gathered about 5 to 7% of all iPhone sales. And So
not the 2, you mean the SE, the original...
The SE, I'm sorry, the SE gathered about 5 to 7% of the original sales. I wrote an article about that a few months ago, maybe July. And so it's a mystery to me why Apple would release an SE 2, considering what a low percentage the SE original had. I don't know.
Oh my God, I so want there to be a John Martorello Ming-Chi Kuo deathmatch. I'm so team John, by the way, obviously.
Here's the thing though, John. I know it wasn't a load of people who bought this. And by the way, this came out February or March after the 6S. So since the original SE made its debut, which was, by the way, it was an iPhone 6S in an iPhone 5S case. It was after the 6S, later that same year, we got the 7. And then we got the 8 and the 10 at the same time. I mean, the 7S and the 10 at the same time. And then this last year, we got the 11. So this is not a new phone. And there have been evolution since the move to Face ID, all of the, like, the a load of the machine learning stuff that's happening, the camera evolution, like I just talked about. A lot of that stuff has happened. And
yeah, but a lot of that stuff gets left out in low-cost phones, too.
Well, but almost everyone I know who has an SE, who bought an SE, is still using it and just continues to say, thank you, Apple, for saving me money by not putting out a new one, because I'm holding onto this one until you won't let me use it anymore. So
that old saw, the plural of data is
the plural of anecdote is not data. And I understand that. But I've never seen people willfully and knowingly carry around a phone that old specifically because it is the right size. Like, I've seen people say, oh, I like the old one better, but I like all the new stuff in this one. I like that I can Apple Pay and, you know, all those kinds of things, even though the 4S was a really nice size, but I really like Apple Pay and things like that. Like, I've seen people evolve grudgingly, and I've not seen people just go no to a new phone the way they do if they're SE users.
They're a vocal minority. The only thing that occurs to me that might be making sense here is that Apple's thinking that after the initial enthusiasm and fervor for the iPhone 11, that sales would drop off in the spring, and this is a way to provide incremental revenue to provide additional sales support for waning iPhone 11 sales as we start hearing about the 2025 G phone. That's the only thing I can think of.
So you mean the 5G phone coming in 2020?
Yeah, I mean...
Well, no, the way you said that, I was like, what's a 2025 G phone? And it just parsed badly in my head. So I'm just making sure people can keep up. It is Monday. I'm trying to cut people some slack.
You would expect in the spring, people, everybody who's bought an iPhone 11 who wants one has gotten one.
Mm-hmm.
Springtime, people are going to start salivating over the 5G phone in the fall. Maybe iPhone 11 sales are not going to be as strong as iPhone XS sales were. And so it makes sense to roll out an incremental revenue phone in the spring.
Mm-hmm. It does. And it makes sense for it to be the SE too, because like every time they've put them in the refurb store, even right, like they've gone immediately, and it's not just because they've got a nice price. Like there are other phones that go into the refurb store all the time, but nobody goes around going, there's an iPhone 8 in the refurb store. Did you know you can get an iPhone 8 in the refurb store? The iPhone 8, it's in the refurb store. You could get one right now. Nobody's doing that for any other model except the SE. Nobody writes up when a new model of iPhone pops up in the refurb store unless it's the SE. So
people love the SE.
The devotion to that phone. Yes, John, I don't think it's a lot of people. I absolutely will concede that point. I don't think it's a lot of people, but I think the people that it is really love that phone.
Mm.
So there it is.
Before we wrap up, the other thing about this is that we're in an era where Apple is also realizing to keep people on board, it needs the hardware to be cheaper. Look at the price points for the 11.
Yes.
It makes total sense for them to keep in that vein with a cheaper model phone.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly because they've now given us the third entry in the product line. So we have the entry level, and then we have a Pro, and then we have a Pro Max. So that makes it possible for people to have a more budget-friendly phone than there was before. So, yeah, you know, if you want to be a person who carries around the giant phone, you can still be that person. So I feel like there might be more to that.
But then the question is, why did they wait so long? Maybe they were waiting for this opportunity to provide sales support for the 11. Maybe they thought the 10S and the 10R were doing so well that they didn't need to do it at that time. But then, why wait?
Yeah. Well, and I don't know why they waited last time either. I mean, as I said at the time, if I had known the SE, if I had known anything about the SE actually being real, I would not have bought a 6S. I would have bought an SE. And there's a very real possibility I would still be using it because it fits in all my pants pockets, which is a story for another day.
Maybe they kind of felt like the SE2 really, really needed Face ID, and they were waiting for economies of scale to include that, because we know that sometimes important latest technologies get left out of the low-cost phones, and maybe they felt like we really want to have Face ID in this phone, so we'll wait until we can do it at an affordable price.
So, yeah, exactly. And the price goes down every evolution that they continue to use it, because we've talked about before, you know, they've sort of got that R&D for free for subsequent models that all use Face ID because they've built it. And now that it's built, the optimization and stuff doesn't take near the time or the effort or the cost in order to do that. So, you know, that part, I think, is very possible. So as we hear more about this, I will, of course, let you know here on Daily Observations. And hopefully I will have the two of you here to discuss it with me. John, thanks so much for being here. I look forward to the release of the SE2 so that we can talk to you about it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Charlotte, I hope you will join me for that episode where we get to spend 20 minutes telling John that he was wrong.
I'm always here for that episode.
That's what I like to hear. Thank you so much for joining us today, everyone. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. This is the Mac Observer Daily Observations Podcast. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.